everyone. Welcome back to the What's Your Life Journey podcast with our guest today, Jessamyn Anderson, also my fellow Hoosier. She's from Indiana, just like me, so we're really excited about it. Thank you for tuning in. We can't wait to share your story. You always had a talent for singing, correct?
Yes.
And I'm going to take you at the beginning.
Okay.
So what did people tell you were your gifts when you were just kind of a baby, a child? And and what did people tell you with the were your gifts, and who were you at that point in your life? Like, kind of not, I mean, like, a lot, what were your passions? What, like, what were some of your insecurities that you remember? Maybe not so at 3 years old or whatever, but as
I had really bad self-esteem at three. No, I'm kidding.
As early as you can remember, what were you like, your passions, your gifts, and what were your struggles and insecurities too?
Okay. So my grandma, my dad's mom, she was kind of the first person that noticed a musical gift. And she told my parents that I started singing before I could talk, which is funny. Huh. So I'd like stand in my crib and sing. So we knew from that moment there was something. But I just grew up always being encouraged in my music. And whether that was something really low key, like children's choir at church, or I was really lucky to have a really wonderful music teacher in elementary school who just kind of took me under her wing and really helped to foster a gift and a love of music. Mm-hmm. And she just had a lot of knowledge and she was willing to share it with me. And so that was kind of an encouragement I just grew up with from a very young age, is her as a music teacher. And so as I kind of headed into like growing up more into middle school and high school, I still was always very encouraged with this musical gift. Mm-hmm. But then heading into middle school, the worst puberty, it's the worst.
I know,
and right? I just kind of like plumped
so
up and probably I like ate too much Chef Boyardee, to be completely honest. But
so specific. Yeah,
it really was the Chef Boyardee, I'm telling you. But I think so as a lot of girls at age, my body just became this huge insecurity for me.
Yeah.
But even through all of that, I was like, give me a mic. Give me a stage and I can do anything. And I always had confidence on the stage.
Okay.
And for me, it was like the bigger the crowd, the better. And I'm still that way, which is something I've been like growing in and out of because I've been doing a lot of smaller performances recently, which I know we'll talk about. But so I grew up kind of insecure in that, in my body.
Gotcha.
And also like I always had a very strong personality and was naturally a leader. Both my sister and I are like very independent, strong women.
Yeah.
And so I always kind of had a struggle like wondering how to be like a feminine woman and like be, but still remain strong and like fighting with that personality. So it was just kind of this interesting thing. But even through like, no matter what, when I was on stage, I felt good about what I was doing. And I felt very purposeful in the use of my gift. And I was always very encouraged. And I have, until I moved to New York, honest to goodness, I never really faced a lot of like real rejection within the music world.
Yeah.
Applying to colleges and music programs and things like that. I got in almost everywhere I applied and had a lot of encouragement.
Yeah.
And so I just, even through like, no matter what insecurities I was facing, whether it was my body, my personality, maintaining strong friendships, I was always fine when I was on stage. And it didn't ever feel like this escape from something bad. It just felt like a pursuit of something really good. Which I couldn't have said that when I was like 16, but I'm looking back on it going, okay, it wasn't like I was running away from something or that the stage was an escape. It really just became a very solid, dependable home for me.
So did you find it hard to connect with people then? Because that was your best self was when you were actually on stage performing.
Oh, that's an interesting question.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I feel, because I do feel like my best self on stage, but I also, just the way that I am, I can't help but be myself pretty much all the time. Now, like when I was acting, you know, and I was a role in a show, I felt like the roles that were very naturally given to me were things that kind of were extensions of parts of my personality.
Okay. So, I never really took something that was kind of completely different from your
Not really. Hmm. Like naturally, I was just always given like strong female characters, and so I was able to be like,
great casting director, this is like
like this is I can totally do this I have played some like provocative characters,
huh,
which is funny because I'm like really conservative morally, but it was kind of fun because I was like, this is nothing like me, but this is like this saucy part of me that I can kind of play. Yeah. And you put me in a costume and I'm just like, I'll do anything, you know, but like put me in a costume. I'm not about that no costume on stage life. I'm not going there. But I do. Even when I was acting, like I always felt like the parts I had were some kind of extension of myself. Okay. So I never felt like it was totally separate from who I am. Right. Yeah.
Okay. Hmm. Mm-hmm. So going back to, I guess when you were maybe in the beginning stages of your performing career, what drew you to musical theater specifically and opera also?
Okay. Well, I grew up, there was always music on in my house. Yeah. And it wasn't always musicals. I remember listening to like a lot of country growing up. Huh. But there was something about, I think it was the spectacle of musicals that I just loved. That's, I remember so cool. My sister and I wearing out the VHS tape for the 10th anniversary concert edition of Les Mis. Like we would just sit in front of the TV and just be like, oh my gosh. And I just remember being overwhelmed by the magnificence of it. It was just this
so cool
massive production with this huge choir and this huge space with all these people watching, and I was like, I want all of that. Like I want to be a part of all of that.
Yeah.
And so I just grew up absolutely loving musicals. Mm. And there were all these other kids like listening to other stuff, and I was just like, I found this new show tune from 1940, blah blah blah, and people were like, you're 13, what's wrong with you, you know? Like, and I just started checking out like all these books from the library about the history of Broadway, and I wanted to watch musicals, and I listened to all these shows, and then I got obsessed with High School Musical. I know we've talked about a common love of it.
I mean, who doesn't love High School Musical?
I'm like, okay, I shouldn't admit that anymore, but I was of the perfect age when it came out. But yeah, I just really, I think I was drawn to the spectacle of it, and to the costumes and the bright colors, and this idea of... again, I couldn't have put this into words until I've like aged a little bit, but I think the idea of like the human experience being captured even in a different era, I think the power of that is really beautiful because it shows how we are connected to people of different eras and times. Yeah. Even when the social environment is different, the culture is different, things like that, we can still relate to people in entirely what seems like an entirely different world through our shared human experiences.
Yeah.
And there aren't really other musical forms doing that outside of musical theater and opera. And opera was kind of like a, I don't even know how to say it. Like I did not grow up with opera at all.
Well, I was gonna say, did you kind of fall into it?
Yeah, I kind of fell into it.
Well, I feel like your voice is too powerful, like in just a musical.
Thank you. No, I love it. I don't want to do it professionally.
Okay.
But I did study it in college, and I kind of learned more about it when I started studying with a classical teacher in halfway through high school.
Okay.
And she was one of the first people that was like, "You can do more than belt, and you can," because I grew up wanting to be like Ethel Merman, which is like, she was, you know, she was an iconic Broadway performer. Okay. Like,
gotcha.
Just this really like powerful Ethel Merman.
What'd she star in?
Like, oh gosh, so many things. Anything Goes, Annie Get Your Gun, things like that.
Gotcha. Okay.
And I wanted to be her, but I don't have that kind of voice. And I didn't really know that until I had this teacher. And she introduced me to a lot of classical music. And I was really captivated by the beauty and the history of it. And then going to college, I went to our alma mater, IU.
Love
it. So I went to Indiana University, but kind of out of like, it just kind of happened.
Yeah.
I didn't, I looked at other music schools and I looked at classical music because I wasn't a strong enough dancer to get into really solid musical theater programs.
Okay.
And so, and my teacher in high school was like, I really think you need to study classically. So I looked at all these schools and I had no idea, no idea that IU was such a fantastic music school.
Literally no
it's
one
like
does
in
until
my
you
backyard.
Go there.
Like I had no idea.
Right.
So I like get into this school and they gave me all this scholarship money and I was like, what the heck? Like, fine, I will go. I will go.
Right.
And I show up and 80% of the school is from out of state.
Yep.
And I have all these people in my freshman class and I'm like, oh, what do you want to do? And they're like, I want to be an opera singer. And I'm like, oh, well, I don't. So, like,
so
I'm just kind of here along for the ride. Like, I had no idea what I was getting myself into.
Okay.
But ignorance was bliss because through that experience, I was able to just hone in on my art form. Mm. And I found a teacher that loved me, and she kicked my butt.
Yeah.
But she supported me in that endeavor of wanting to continue with musical theater. She exposed me to a lot of classical music. Being at IU, it's unavoidable because they do six operas a year. Yep. So I got to be in operas, and I got to experience that world. And I still, there was something that was like not quite feeding my soul the same way that musical theater did.
Gotcha.
And so I ended up like kind of always being this little odd man out and being like, oh, yeah, I'm closing my senior recital with a musical theater set. And people were like, are you allowed? I'm like, I don't care. Right. I'm doing it anyway. So, yeah,
Is that kind of how you always were in life? Like you were going to do it anyways and you were going to trailblaze no matter what?
I think I'm a little bit of an odd combination of like trailblazing while still loving tradition. Because I love like old musical theater. So I love the golden age. I love the stuff from like mid-1930s to like 1965. And after that, I'm kind of like, I don't know what y'all did until like 1995. Like, I don't know what you were thinking.
Really?
Yeah, not my era.
Okay.
And, but anything of that like traditional era, I love. But in a way, doing that music now is in a way trailblazing because people aren't doing it. And so bringing it back to the forefront of music, I think has been an interesting experience. And that has something that has been majorly challenging on my road because New York was not really the place for it anymore. Right. I think the Broadway that I dreamt of as a kid kind of died in 1965.
Okay.
And I wasn't aware of that until I was in the city, like in the audition world. And I was just like, I don't think this is what I want. I don't think this is where I'm supposed to be. And I know we'll talk about that, but yeah, I it's kind of an odd combination of loving the tradition, but also like trying to bring it back in a really like, come on, let's move forward with this.
Definitely.
Let's glorify this tradition of this music and like let's look at where we came from and know what's good about it and make it new again.
Which I think a lot of people kind of miss out on in everything. We kind of forget about the history with things for some reason. I don't really know why, but it tells the story of where things came from and why aren't we bringing it with us into whatever we're doing.
Yeah, well, and I think right now because we live in an era where content is it's never ending. I mean, like your Instagram feed will literally never end because content is so constant. I think we don't always see the need for understanding history when there's just always something new.
Yeah.
Whereas like back, you know, 100 years ago, content wasn't being created so quickly.
So true.
And so you could focus on like, oh, where did this come from? How did we get here? And now it's like, we're right here and we're moving forward all the time. Yep. It's like, we can't even remain present for 5 minutes, let alone focus on like 50 years ago.
That's such a good point. Yeah. Huh. Yeah, that's a very interesting point. So when you're back at IU, at Jacobs, what do you feel like made you really shine at that school?
Oh.
I mean, it's super competitive.
It is competitive.
Yeah.
I think for me, a lot of, like, the thing that has helped me, I think, the most, no matter what I've been doing, is my inability to not be myself.
Huh.
So I am who I am, and that, not that I'm like not willing to grow or that I'm willing to change and learn, but I am myself all the time. And I think in a world where things like spectacle and magnificence can like take over, for someone who's willing and able to be themselves within that costumed and makeuped world, it can, how do I put this? It can kind of shoot through a lot of the inauthenticity of that industry. And so I think for me, my ignorance of like the fame and caliber of the school I was in was a huge blessing. There were all these faculty members that are like Grammy Award winners that I was Dr. Baker. You know, like all these people that I was like, I had no idea how big of a name they were. To me, they were my music theory professor or they were my German diction coach or whatever. Right. And so I think, like, the ignorance of the fame was really helpful. And so I was able to cultivate authentic relationships with these professors and just see them as people instead of these icons of, like, what music could be.
Right.
I just saw them as mentors and like, really great relationships to form. I think, again, like, my willingness to learn and to admit very freely, like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I want to know and I want to get better.
Yeah.
But I don't actually know what I'm doing, and I'm okay to be like, no, I haven't seen that opera. No, I don't know who that composer is. And everyone's like, oh, I know this and this and this. And I was just like, I can tell you about all the Broadway musicals from like 1945 on. You know, like my area of knowledge was just so different that I think like to kind of narrow it down to like three things. So like my inability to not be myself. Okay. So just this constant authenticity, my ignorance of fame and celebrity status of some of the professors. And also just this, like, my love was a little bit of a different, had a little bit of a different direction than a lot of other people in my class and in my program. And so I think there was just kind of like, she's the musical theater girl in the opera world. And that helped me kind of stand out in a way that I was able to get cast in some productions that people were like, ooh, that's not like of the opera. That's more the operetta, or that's musical theater. And I was like, sign me up. I'll take it. I want that part, you know? Yeah. So I think those are kind of the things that helped me remain in that space really well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So within the program, I mean, since you were so different, you really didn't feel like you struggle with being isolated too much, like in your head even?
You know, honestly, I never felt musically isolated. Okay. I felt morally isolated. From like choosing my faith over a lot of other things. Yes. And like college was a really big time when I was growing in my faith. And I was just starting to recognize like what choices I wanted to make and trying to like, again, be open to life experiences, but also just being like, you know, I don't actually want to be a part of that. And I don't want to be at that party. Mm-hmm. And like keeping there were values. People doing things that I was like, you are ruining your music career by making those choices. And I was like, I've worked too flipping hard to be here. Yeah. I don't want to do that. So I never felt musically isolated, and I always loved being in shows, and I loved the casts that I got to work with and the directors and all of that. And I was always on great terms with the costume crew and things like that. But it was more like my moral values and choices that isolated me. But I had one of my best friends, shout out Jordan Goodman Nell. Now she's married Nell. But she was also kind of the same vein of moral choices as me. And we just like connected at orientation before freshman year and just kind of rode the wave together. Right. She was also a voice major with me and still one of my best friends to this day.
Oh, that's wild.
So we were kind of this little like weird little like pocket in our class, but I had someone and that was a huge help.
And was she kind of your support network through everything? And
in a lot of ways, because we did have some classes together and stuff, but we also like she was the person I hung out with a lot on the weekends. She wasn't really in my church crowd because she went to a different church, but she was definitely like my rock friend through all of college and still to this day she's one of the people that I call and I'm like, yo, I'm having this situation and I need your help, you know?
Yeah.
So
after college, you went to good old New York City.
I went to good old New York City.
And it didn't turn out the way you had expected.
No, because I don't live there anymore.
Exactly.
So I ended up I moved home for a year to save money.
Okay.
Thank God. Because New York is, in case you didn't know, really friggin' expensive to live there. So I moved home and I'm really glad I did that. Yeah. And the summer, actually, after college and then the summer between my year at home and moving, both of those summers, I worked for a company called the Ohio Light Opera Company.
Okay.
Loved it. Best two summers of my life. 2018, that's a challenge to you to make this a better summer.
Yeah, right.
But those were the best summers of my life. And I got to perform in like six different shows throughout the course of the summer. And all of that. And I felt like that prepared me really well for New York. Mm-hmm. And it actually gave me a lot of friends that already lived in the city, which was great.
Perfect, yeah.
So I ended up moving there fall of 2016. And I lived in Midtown Manhattan. So like 10 minutes from Times Square.
That's amazing.
Which was crazy. And I was pretty starry-eyed for a little while. Mm. Like totally looked like a tourist. I was always looking up like, I can't believe I live here. It took me a week to get over my fear of the subway. Was like, I'm not getting on there. And I had a friend that visited and she was like, you have to get on the subway.
Oh,
get over it. I was like, okay. And I figured it out. And now I kind of miss it because sometimes I'm tired and I'm like, can someone else just drive me home?
Yeah, true. Right.
But yeah, so I moved there. Pretty starry-eyed for a little while and started doing some auditions. And I did some auditions in both, like, the opera world, just a couple, but I mostly honed in on musical theater.
Okay.
And you can find out about all of them online. You look at the postings. and I started going. And I had some guidance from some people that were already in it, helping me to, like, put together my book, which is, like, the book of music that you take to your auditions. And it's, like, a certain number of songs, different eras, different styles, so that you go in and you can always be prepared with like whatever they need to hear.
Okay.
And so I find these postings, and I was not in the Actors Union. I was not Equity. So you could only go to non-Equity auditions, or you could go to Equity auditions and hope to God that they see non-Equity people at the end of the day. So
it's a lot harder.
It's a lot harder. Gotcha. So, but there is a beauty in being non-Equity because you can work for non-Equity and Equity, but once you're Equity, you can't work outside of Equity.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, so I was like starting to do these auditions, and I would go at an ungodly hour in the morning when it was still dark, and you'd write your name on a piece of paper on a wall or maybe inside the building if it was a nice enough audition. Like, I'm not kidding, like 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. What? And you'd like check this website to see if anybody would update, like if they were going to see non-Equity people or what the updates were. And then you'd go back and you would wait and you would wait and you would wait for hours on end.
Wow.
And then you may or may not be seen, and you'd sing for like 30 seconds and then you'd peace out and then you may never hear from them again. It was like 5 hours of my day.
Yeah.
And I was like, first of all, how do you make money?
Like
living in a place like New York and audition, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And every time, no joke, every time I left an audition, I would hear this voice in my head that was like, this is not your door. And I was like, shut up. No, like I am supposed to do this. This is what everybody has been telling me I'm supposed to do. By golly, I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go to these auditions. And I just had no success. And I had professors in college that were like, you're going to have no problem getting a job. Like, you're going to have no problem at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there and I kept going to all these auditions and I just never got callbacks. And I always had the same general feedback, which was like, you're amazing. Mm-hmm. I have nothing for you. Like, they didn't know what to do with my style.
What?
And I always looked a little different. Like, I always dressed in a more, like, classy, put together way. And I, you know, every person I met had a BFA degree. And I was just like, I just felt like a fish out of water. I was like, I am just in the wrong place. But I was like, I'm going to do this. Dang it. Like, I'm supposed to do this.
Break down the doors.
Yeah. I'm going to freaking kick them in, you know? So I kept going to these auditions. And it wasn't the rejection that started to wear me out. It was the questions. It was the like, what am I actually doing here? And what is my purpose for being here?
Mm-hmm.
And then I ended up going home for Christmas that year and just kind of had this like epiphany in prayer and was like, what is my actual purpose?
Mm.
And like, am I like, to be like totally frank about it, like speaking about Jesus here, like I realized that I had basically been telling God what I wanted and then being like, hey, can you come help me with this? I want to do this. Instead of being like, what do you want me to do and how do you want me to do it?
Yeah.
So I made a vow for 2017 that I was just going to ask God every day what he wanted, and I was not going to tell him anything that I wanted.
Huh.
And if I found myself starting to do that in my journals or whatever, I would like literally cross it out and be like, what do you want?
That's really cool.
And he just like took that door and was like, all right, now we've got work to do.
Huh.
And enter like the darkest months of my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
So January and February 2017, I lived in this like boarding house thing in New York. It was so isolating. It's just horrible. It was so bad. And it was like winter in New York. So literally everything's gray. Like the snow is gray.
Yeah.
The sky, the buildings, everything's gray.
Right.
People's faces are just like, they got their hoods up. They don't want to talk to anybody.
Yeah.
And I just started to realize that I had placed my entire identity in musician.
Mm-hmm.
That was my title, or performer, or singer.
Right.
Insert word for musician there.
Mm-hmm.
And I had placed my entire identity in that. And through the course of my questioning of, like, what do you want me to do? He was like, I need you to know that that's not who you are.
Yeah, right.
Like, it is something you do, but it's not who you are.
Yeah.
So then what proceeded to happen was this, like, really painful stripping away of everything I'd ever identified with. So I was kind of like, I just had a cold that wouldn't go away. And so I didn't really have a good singing voice. I stopped going to auditions and I just kind of like rejected my music. I was like, my music is the thing that brought me to the city. I'm in a lot of pain being here. Therefore, I'm going to reject the thing that brought me pain, which was my music.
Yeah.
In my very convoluted, messed up head at the point.
I was
like, music brought me here. So I'm going to reject everything I've ever known.
Yeah.
So, but because I did that, it allowed all of these things to be pulled away from me. And I was kind of laid bare in this place of like, I have no idea who I am anymore.
Yep.
And I told you, like, I've always rested in like knowing who I am and just like not being able to not be that person.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden I was like, I don't actually know who Jessamyn Anderson is.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to kind of reflect on like, okay, what other things do I enjoy? Well, I love ministry. So maybe I need to look into ministry as a career and all of these things. And so I started to do that. I started to connect with people in the ministry world, okay. which is how I met Jimmy Mitchell, who now...
In New York.
I met him through a connection back in Indiana, but, like, talked to him on the phone when I was in New York.
Okay.
So, and he's now... He hates when I call him my boss, but he is my boss.
Right. Yeah.
At Lovegood. And then, like, through the course of that rejection of gift, this stripping away, this seeking out of other endeavors, I got invited to this group that changed my life, which was a discussion group on a document called The Letter to Artists, which is by John Paul II. And it was basically this letter calling out artists to be like, if you have a gift, you have to use it. Like, it's been given to you, you have to use it. And I was like, there's no way out of this anymore. Like, I've been called out. Yep. I can't reject this music thing anymore. And so I started to be like, okay, if I can't reject music, like, how do I use this gift? And I was like, maybe I'll do praise and worship. And I was like, I am not cut out for praise and worship music. Like, that's, I love it, but it's not where my voice is.
Right.
And then I was like, well, maybe I could do, like, church music, singer, songwriter. And I was like, Jessamyn, you don't even play an instrument. How do you think you're going to be a singer, songwriter?
Like, definitely not.
Reality check here. and so I... But that letter just helped me to understand that no matter what I did, like, I had a gift to use, but it didn't define who I was.
Okay.
And then I started to realize, like, my gift, which is the thing that brought me to New York, had value and has value outside of the place I originally thought it was going to be.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, I thought I was going to be in New York forever. I said, I am only, like, my gift is only worth something if I'm living in New York and I'm on Broadway. And anything other than that is not good enough.
Arena.
Yeah.
Huh.
Anything other than that is not good enough for me.
Gotcha.
Or it's not where I'm supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then through then, like, rejecting it, seeking other things out, recognizing I had to use it somehow.
Yep.
That letter to artists group kind of began, like, a healing journey. And, like, I was at that point totally stripped down. And then, like, a gradual rebuilding happened. And it's still going on.
Yeah.
Because
what did that look like at first?
Well, it just kind of looked like singing again. Like,
just to sing.
Just to sing. Even if it wasn't show
tunes. So falling in love with your passion again.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Like, just kind of, like, welcoming it back in.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this dear friend, Marianne, who lived in New York with me. And she's also, like... Oh my gosh, she's a freaking amazing singer. She's in the middle of the Caribbean singing on a cruise ship now.
Oh, that's amazing.
And but she and I would just sing together sometimes in my room, and that helped me to kind of open myself back up to that. And then last summer, I was back in Indiana, and I helped to lead some praise and worship nights, or I would lead the music at church, and just, like, using my voice again, and then starting to listen to musical theater soundtracks again was a huge deal for me, because I was like, I don't want anything to do with this world. Because I was like, I'm never going to be a part of it.
Right.
And because in my mind, that art form did not exist outside of New York.
Okay.
And so that healing, that rebuilding began to happen. And I kind of began to, like, let God build me up in all the right ways by being like, okay, first and foremost, like, you are my daughter.
Right.
Period.
Period.
Okay.
Yep.
Now we can talk about other things.
Like,
yes, you are a performer. Yes, you are a creative. Yes, you, like, are very outgoing. Yes, you're all of these things. But, like,
first
and foremost, like, you are my daughter, period. And then we can move forward. And so, like, that was the core that had to be understood before the rebuilding could happen. And everything had to be stripped away for that to be placed, because I didn't know it existed.
So how did you receive that then? Because even when everything was stripped, it's still hard to just kind of... I mean, take it in every single day and be like, yeah, I am your daughter, and that's all I am right now.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so how did you receive that?
I'm still receiving it.
Know, right?
Yeah, I'm still receiving it. I think just, like, spending a lot of time in prayer, because, like, that's where the conversation with God happens. And so... Like if you think about a friendship, for example, like, you get to know somebody by what? By spending time with them, right? And so, like, and you get to know who you are with that friend by spending time with them.
Yep.
And that's essentially what I had to do with God. Like, I was already a devout person, but my relationship with God was totally transformed when I was able to be like, okay, I need to spend time with you to get to know you, but I also need to spend time with you because you made me, and therefore you know me better. And so, like knowing... Like, getting to know him made it easier to receive what he was giving me.
Okay.
Just, like, you can't take criticism from somebody new in your life, right? But like it's better, it's easier to take it from somebody. Sometimes it's hard initially, but eventually it's more helpful when it's from somebody that knows you really well. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh,
they can see your blind spots.
Like, yeah. They're like, they totally called me out and I really needed that. And like, you can cry a little bit and it hurt a little bit, but like, I can take that. I can receive that because I know them and they know me. Mm-hmm. And I know that they know me.
Exactly.
And that's what it had to be with God, is I just had to like know him for that to happen.
So what did that look like?
Oh, man.
like a lot more time in
A lot more time in prayer. Word. Yeah. Starting to just like, I started going to daily mass, which really helped. Because through that process, I also learned that like a relationship can't be always an emotional thing.
That's what I'm learning too. Yep. So like, much discipline.
Yeah. It can't just like, when I go to mass, I don't leave every day going, I'm Jesus, so excited. Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
like,
right?
I'm like,
I'm going to mass.
Okay, I'm going to mass. Like, I did that today, and like, that was a really good thing. And sometimes, like, the gospel hits, and other times I'm like, man, that reading from the book of Hebrews, like, I have no idea what that sometimes, was talking about.
Sometimes you're there and you're yawning.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. But like, I went and I showed up. Mm. And that's when what we have up. To do. And you're in any friendship or in any, you know, relationship of any kind, it's like, you just have to show up sometimes.
That is such a good point. Yeah.
Even if you don't feel it. Or in the,
you
in
might
there,
not receive something from it. You just have to be there.
You just have to be there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I love that. Okay. So now you're living in Nashville. You're working for Love Good, which tell us more about that, first of all. And then also like the relationship with Jimmy and how that ended up being where you are right now.
Yeah. So I work with Love Good, which is a media company that's inspiring a cultural movement to like build a better culture through higher media standards. Mm-hmm. So, the way that it, like, the thing that I love about it is it's a mission that I think has always kind of been written here, but I didn't really have a vocabulary for until I started working with the company, because it's a way of saying, like when you are intentional with the media that you intake, you become what you want to be.
That's so true.
Like, you become what you love. And, like, if the things that you're saturating, I sounded so Hoosier there, but the things that you're saturating your brain with, like, they do affect you. And so when you're intentional with the media that you choose, and I'm not talking, like, turn on K-Love 24-7, like, not hating on K-Love, I turn it on sometimes too, but, like, when you intentionally choose good media to fill your head with, you will become who you're supposed to be because you become more human. Mm. And that's what Love Good does. Gotcha. And it's not Christian music. A lot of the artists are, but they speak to the core of the human experience, which I talked about with musical theater. Like one of the things I love is this, like accessing the human experience. And I've learned a lot about what that looks like in a contemporary way through a lot of singer-songwriters that I've gotten to experience through my work with Love Good. So my title is the communications director, but I wear a lot of hats. So I do a lot of the marketing and the social media and a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff. And how I got connected to Jimmy is, like, worth a whole other weird podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it was so bizarre and just kind of, like, divinely inspired.
Yep, absolutely.
Happened to Baja Burrito down the road. I came to visit and ended up, like, walking out with this job offer.
That's incredible.
That, like, with a job that didn't really exist. So I kind of have, like,
also,
created
there's a Baja
it.
Burrito at IU. Just saying.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, that's... God bless all of them. That's so wonderful. So it's been this, like, really beautiful friendship and, like, professional relationship that's kind of developed over time. And we've learned a lot about each other. Like I said, you get to know somebody and then you know who you are with them. And so we have this great, like, working professional friendship. And we can work really well together because he tends to be more in the, like, lofty, poetic way of explaining something. And I'm just like, I'm just going to tell you how it is.
Yep.
Like, I'm very conversational in the way that I write, the way that I speak. And so we are a really good balance of that. And so we've done a lot of work and things like that. And I know one of the things that you have talked to me about is, like, how does it work for you to be working with these other artists as, like, a communications person and not, like, an artist? It's been challenging. It's getting a lot better because I'm seeing the core of the mission and, like, what my role in that is looking like now. But, like, initially there, and even in, like, the past several months, it's been challenging to be like, okay, like, I'm booking these other artists for certain things or, like, hiring them out for these Love Good things. I'm like, dang, I really want to do that, you know? Mm-hmm. And I ended up getting to do that at the end of April, beginning of May, on one of our little tours. And Jimmy played piano, beautiful pianist. He played piano and I sang at some events in the Southeast.
Hmm.
And it was this like magical little duo, like performance chemistry that we were like,
Did you even practice?
Yeah, we practiced like one afternoon.
So not really.
Not really. We picked out the music and it was this odd little set list of like Sarah Bareilles, Drew Holcomb, and then like Les Mis and The Greatest Showman. Like,
that is wild.
Yeah, it's weird. It was super weird. But it worked. Somehow it worked. And that was a really beautiful experience. And it was there were a lot of unexpected blessings and unexpected understandings of myself that came out of those experiences. Because as I said, like growing up, the bigger the audience, the better. Right. And I still am like, I love performing at large concert halls. And I still do that work and I want to do more of it. Mm-hmm. Also, you get to wear pretty dresses when you do things like that. I'm all about that life. I've performed for, 4,000 people. Mm-hmm. Great. But on these Love Good events, I was performing for like 40 people and I could see all of their faces, which
so kind intimate.
Of freaks me out sometimes. And I could see their faces. It was like poolside. There was a living room. And it was really beautiful because something that I learned was that even though I fell in love with the spectacle of musical theater, the thing that keeps it relevant is that human experience. Mm-hmm. And if you can share that with people in an intimate setting, it makes a very spectacular art form accessible.
Mm.
And so I learned that. I also learned that like I'm not too loud for a backyard. I just don't need a microphone. Just don't give me a microphone and we're fine.
Yeah.
You know, but like I can be in those spaces and my gift has value there.
Yes.
It has gift with a symphony backing me, but it has gift with an electric keyboard backing me as well.
Right.
And it has a purpose because it was given to me and it's supposed to be used.
Yeah.
And you
don't necessarily get to choose how it's used.
No.
You get to choose if it's used or not. That's the only control you have.
That's the only control I have.
Yeah.
And I had to recognize that, like, those musical experiences are so valuable. Yeah. And they weren't, like, when I was a kid, I wasn't like, I want to sing next to somebody's pool in Pensacola, Florida.
Course.
Like,
yeah, who would?
You don't think of that as a kid, you know?
Right. You have this, like, grandiose idea of what success is, no matter what, and it's never a simple thing for some reason.
No, it's never. It's never simple because I think we dream, our imaginations as kids are so big, and then now we're inundated with all this media that's like, well, your life could be like this, and it's like, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, my life looks like this right now, and this is important because it's what's been given to me right in this moment.
Right. And it's simpler, but also more beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so the cool things about those concerts and those events, I also got to speak at them, which is like another professional endeavor that I'm getting more into that I love. And then you get to talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I sat down and had these like really intense, beautiful conversations that night.
You don't finish and go backstage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no dressing room.
Right.
You know, there's no like, let me just shut the door. No, it's like you're in it with them.
So true.
And then you're like fighting for all of the same things that they're fighting for. And they get to like battle with you.
Yeah.
You know, because like with Love Good, we're like culture warriors.
Yep.
We're like fighting for the culture we want to be a part of, right?
Right?
And it's like there's no – so in theater, there's a term called the fourth wall, which is like the wall between the audience and the stage.
Okay.
So like some shows don't break that fourth wall. Like the performers are characters that don't know that an audience exists.
Huh.
Some shows, like some more contemporary comedies, will break that fourth wall. Well, they'll like, you know, talk to the audience or whatever.
Right, okay.
But like there's no fourth wall at these events.
Hmm.
There's no fourth wall. And I would love to even continue, like, no matter the size of the venue I get to perform in, I would love for there to never be that fourth wall. Because
when
you invite people into experiencing music that way, that's where, like, uniting, like, that's where music becomes a uniting thing instead of a dividing thing. And there's so much division and isolation in our culture right now. And, like, if we can use media to like say, this is what life is supposed to look like, and I want you to come with me and be a part of it, and I want to be a part of what you're doing, instead of like, my life is awesome, and don't you wish you had everything I have.
So true.
Like, the power in that, oh my gosh.
And then, at the same time, we would stop idolizing people,
yes,
and we would have healthier communication with people, and relationships with people, and it would just all around be healthier in the media world, in the music world, in all worlds.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody this weekend, actually, at like a bonfire last night, about even within the ministry world, there's like famous people, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know what? They are people just like us. And with yep. musicians, you know, a lot of them, that's like, they are people just like us mm-hmm. who are striving for a beautiful, intentional life. Mm-hmm. They just happen to be living it out in right. front of a lot more people.
And a lot of people don't even choose it. It just happens.
It just happens yeah. to them. And they don't wake up and they're like, I want, you know, 140,000 Instagram followers. Mm-hmm. Some people want that and they get it. Yeah. And then you know what happens? Like, they're still not happy.
Right.
You know, but if people are like genuinely pursuing the good mm-hmm. and the beautiful in their lives and that happens to them, like,
yeah.
good, then that person is living out goodness and truth right. in front of those 140,000 mm-hmm. Instagram which followers, incredible. Which is influence. So powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. I love that. Yeah. And so I think now that you're here in Nashville mm-hmm. and you're really learning how to appreciate your gift and value your gift in smaller settings, mm-hmm. like, where are you at right now in your life? Who would you say Jessamyn Anderson is right now?
Hmm. I have become far less of a planner than I used to be. Like, people are like, well, you want to do this project, but like, what's your 5-year plan? And I'm like, yeah. I don't make those anymore because the one that I had crumbled and then really something really beautiful came out of it.
Yeah.
So, who am I? Oh, what words? Just striving for the good and the true and the beautiful and trying to see, what that looks like in an intentional way. And also just like using my gifts where they're called to be used right now and not okay. thinking like, well, I'm this age and it's this year and I have to make this happen or I'm not worth anything. Right. I have to be like, I have a life ahead of me. And this timeline that I'm on, like, erase it, get yeah. rid of it. Like, I turned 25 this year and I kind of had like a,
yeah, right.
I thought I would have so much more figured out and I have like more questions than I did when I was 21.
Right.
And I just had to be like, okay, your timeline doesn't matter. Your plan doesn't matter. Like, where are you right now? Be who you're called to be right yep. now. And continue to cultivate your gift. So, like, practice your flipping music, Jessamyn. Like, I need to be so much yep. more disciplined in my practice. And just, like, remain disciplined and hopeful while still being open to what happens next. And not trying to say, like, I do not decide what is valuable and what is not.
You don't.
Yeah. I don't make that decision. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to just be the person I'm supposed to be, use the gifts I've been given for the good, for like good, for good purposes. Mm-hmm. And then I'm trying to remain in a state of trust and hope that things will happen as they're supposed to, yeah. as long as I have like a posture of welcoming those things in.
Right. Inviting.
That was not a very succinct answer to who I am.
That but is that's fine. Like,
that's it doesn't where have I'm at to be. Right now.
It's messy.
So, yeah, yeah. And I think also, too, like, with music in particular, I love the music that I love. Mm-hmm. Like, I love a lot of different types of music and yeah. listening to things. But, like, I love the Great American Songbook. And I love Golden Age musical theater.
Hmm.
And you know what? That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I'm supposed to do.
Right.
And it's not in New York. So there's this like little voice that's like, no one in Nashville knows what to do with you. Uh-huh. That's been this like little lie in my head for months and months and months. And I had to go through this kind of like, shut up. Like,
yep.
No.
Right.
You are here for a reason. I am so much happier than mm-hmm. I was in New York. Just yeah. like, oh, you have no idea how much happier I am.
People are just so much more like
you. People are so much more like me. Yeah. yeah. Although the other day someone was like, you're really Midwestern. I was like, I don't know what that means, but I'm going to say
don't get that
thank
either.
You.
Yeah, I don't know.
But like, I love that music. I'm going to do it.
Yep.
And like, if I'm, like I said, if I'm using the gifts I have, then like good things will happen.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know what that looks like.
Exactly.
And I'm okay with that. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what my life looks like.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh, 18-year-old me would be like, what are you doing?
I know.
Like, 18-year-old me would be like, what's your plan? You know? Right. And I'm just like, I don't need one and I don't know.
I get it though. Cause like, I mean, for me in my life, I always had a plan. My mom was a planner. Mm-hmm. And so I took that on and was like, okay, I'm going to plan everything too. And then when I went to IU, I became involved in dance music and then thought I was moving to LA and artist manager. Then I came and visited Nashville and God was like, no, you are not doing any of that. You have no idea what you're going to do. And then I, for a year, I also, too, had no idea what I was going to do.
Yeah.
And then really felt like he was just calling me to tell stories. And I didn't know what that looked like. And I'm still figuring it out, even though I'm right here telling your
story.
Well,
this is part of it.
And that's the thing. And I think this ended up being something so much more simple than I ever imagined it to be, because people were like, you are a great conversationalist. You genuinely care about people.
This is so true.
Why are you not just having conversations with people and just put it on camera? It's like, you're so right. That's so easy. And like literally something I don't even have to think about. And it sounds like for you, you're doing very similar things in when you're speaking and you get to play music in front of a smaller audience than you ever imagined, but still an audience. And like, you're still getting to impact people on a much more personal level now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I love it. I love it. And I never imagined. I love that you talked about how what we picture as kids is never simple.
It's not
simple at all.
It's something huge.
Yeah. And I think like something that I've really fallen in love with the last several months is like this simplicity, whether that's like getting rid of more material things, which is something I've worked on, or just like resting on Sundays and like not like I am such a like I tend to get into workaholic mode.
I don't picture you resting.
Yeah. It's like it takes some effort to like, Jessamyn, just sit down, you know, but like trying to actually just be like, you know what? I don't need to work all the time. Mm-hmm. And the time that I do work, like, don't get distracted, you know, like put your phone away or log out of Facebook or whatever it is that's distracting me. Like, use the time you have, use it well.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, use the time you have, use your gifts well, everything will fall into place. And I think we just have to trust that it's not always going to look like, usually it's not going to look like anything.
Exactly.
We ever imagined.
But
and
it's
yet,
always
like,
going to be better.
It is. Like, aren't you so much happier?
100%.
Yeah.
So, I can't imagine if I moved to LA.
Don't do it.
I would have died probably.
Yeah. And here we are in Nashville, Tennessee. So much happier and with beautiful people that we love to spend our time with.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, to wrap everything up, what would you say has been maybe the most profound quote that you've heard, or a Bible verse or a story that has really just held you grounded throughout all of this and has kind of defined your entire journey for you?
Wow. So, okay, so this is related because I talked about the letter to artists from John Paul II. Yeah. I don't remember it exactly. I'm sorry,
no,
JP2.
That's fine.
But he in his letter, he talks about each of us as artists having a vocation of beauty.
Mm.
And that phrase has really stuck with me through a lot of things, because whether that's like pursuing beauty with my art or simply with my way of life, like I am called to a vocation of beauty.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And I have to remember that phrase all the time, because beauty doesn't need to be contained within the walls of a church for it to be good. And that was something I struggled with. And then to understand that like my way of life can also be beautiful, that was something I was like, what does that look like?
Yeah.
And then to also say like, okay, I've been given this gift, so I'm called to use it, which, you know, vocation, your call.
Right.
So just that whole, that very simple phrase, like vocation of beauty, has been the thing that has kind of grounded me in a lot of ways to be like, what is this that you're called to? Why are you doing this? Right. And if you're not pursuing that vocation, then you probably need to stop doing that and reconsider.
Right. So it's really become a mission statement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think it's amazing because it's something that you can easily look back on. And those words are so simple, like they mean a lot. Mm-hmm. You know if something's not beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know if it's not the right intentions, for the most part, I would hope.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's easier to say no now that you have, or to say yes now that you have that mission statement.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, to finally wrap things up, where can people find you on your social media?
Social media. Ooh, it's in the process of under construction, but mostly I'm on the Insta. I'm on Instagram at Jessamyn Anderson.
Cool.
Super simple. It's my name. That's Jessamyn.
Yeah, you should totally spell
Anderson. Anderson. So I'm on Instagram. And my website is jessamynanderson.com.
Cool.
Thanks, Mom, for giving me a unique name.
Oh, yeah. And you write too, right?
I do, but my blog is really out of date. But if you want to check out some of my blog posts, it's leadingladyblog.com.
Mm.
And then if you want to learn more about Love Good, too, that website is lovegoodculture.com.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And I just really appreciate you talking about all of this and really just talking about it as you're still going through it. I feel like I say this in every single podcast, but to me, that is the most powerful thing you can do, is to talk about something while you're in the midst of it.
Mm-hmm.
And not just oh, I overcame it 10 years ago and it's not part of me anymore. But now that you're in the process of unwinding and really mm-hmm. still trying to figure out who you are and valuing your gift, I think that's just incredible.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on today, Kira.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for listening to the What's Your Life Journey podcast with our guest today, Jessamine Anderson. We would love for you to subscribe to our YouTube channel at the link in the description.
You can be a part of the What's Your Life Journey Patreon community, where you'll receive access to more exclusive content from our podcast guests like me.
To find our Patreon community, you can go to the link in the description, or you can go to patreon.com/whatsyourlifejourney. Thank you again for tuning in. We appreciate you.